We've been engaged in a series just exploring and digging a little more deeply into truth metaphysical principles. And we've been using the book, We've been using the book Heart-Centered Metaphysics by Reverend Paul Hesselbeck, who's the dean of the, or used to be the dean of the Unity Institute. Ann and I both had him for various metaphysics classes. Today is really the last day in our series for now. We're going to review it or go back to it later to hit some of the chapters we missed. But next week, we're going to talk about affirmative prayer in honor of World Day of Prayer. And the week following, we start our abundance series. So we're going to end this metaphysical series today. But I thought it might not be a bad idea for us to end it with a little bit lighter touch. For one thing, Paul Hesselbeck is a very serious guy. He is a zealot. He really is. And yet he has a really funny side. So we're going to look at a couple of books that he co-authored with Dr. Bill Holden, and they are Get Over It, The Truth About What You Know That Just Ain't So, and the companion book, Get Over These Two, More Truth About What You Know That Just Ain't So. Now you noticed, English teacher that I am, I couldn't use the word ain't in a title, but that's basically what we're talking about today. So, it's funny, they say in these little books that there are some phrases that are very familiar to those of us in New Thought that are actually euphemisms, platitudes, and stock sayings. And even though these sayings may be part of our common unity language, the authors maintain that they may not actually be in alignment, or at least not completely in alignment, with principles of truth. Unfortunately, they become part of our daily illusion, and we believe they are true. The point is that words have power. In Proverbs 18:21, we read, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." And Unity Minister Eric Butterworth believes that this is an especially startling idea to most of us, because sometimes we really don't pay much attention to what comes flying out of our mouths. Have you noticed that? In other words, we're sort of like this. You know that little thing in your head that keeps you from saying what you shouldn't? Yeah, I don't have one of those. Jesus said in Matthew 15:11, "It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it is what comes out of the mouth that defiles a person." And lastly, the Jafalos, the authors of The Quest, say, "Words are lasers of human thought." I love that phrase, lasers of human thought. So in the introduction to Get Over It, the authors warn that we might feel the urge to defend some of these phrases because we've been using them for years without questioning their validity, and we might have become attached to them, kind of like an old sweater, you know? They give us comfort. Nietzsche said, "Sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed." And the authors say that if we want to dramatically enhance our spiritual walk, if we want to go deeper and live more abundantly, we'll consider the wisdom of the old adage. Actually, this is contributed to many authors, but since we live in Missouri, I'm choosing Mark Twain, and it is, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so." So in that spirit, the authors say it's not so much the unanswered questions that keep us in the dark. It's the unquestioned answers, the tradition, the dogmatic beliefs which can keep us stuck. This reminds me of a few years ago when I was in a public school, and my job was to go around with this new writing program and model lessons for teachers and help them use it. And it was just a brand new, unorthodox program. And we developed a complete new language around it. Kids and teachers all use it at the same time. And about 2 or 3 years into the program, I had went to a conference and heard one of the original researchers speak, and he said, "We have to be careful that we don't create a new orthodoxy." And I have always remembered that. I wrote it down. And I think sometimes in Unity we are a little guilty of creating a new orthodoxy. We pride ourselves on being unorthodox and original and creative. And sometimes I think we have our own orthodoxy, which is okay as long as it's based on truth, right? So the point is that the authors of this little book say that we absolutely sometimes pride ourselves in our little sayings. They give us comfort. But they invite us today to open our hearts and minds to think about whether some of the things we say all the time just not might not be so. So here's the question. Are you ready? Are you willing? Okay, well, here goes. Take a deep breath. The first one is hit by a cosmic 2x4. How many of you have heard that? I'm not going to ask who's used it, okay? I'm just asking who heard it. I think we've all heard it. Well, the authors say that this phrase is traditional theology dressed up in New Thought clothing. The idea of a cosmic 2x4 assumes that there's a separate, distant God trying to send us pain in order to get our attention to teach us a lesson for our own good. Now, my mother used to use that expression all the time. This is for your own good, and I never did trust it very much. I didn't like what was coming. Furthermore, this theory is if we don't get it the first time, the whack of the 2x4 becomes increasingly more painful until finally we pay attention. This theory that something outside of ourselves is trying to force us to do what's right, just think about it. It abdicates personal choice, it eliminates free will, and we can just not take responsibility because it's not our fault, right? The thing about this 2x4 business is it just isn't so. The authors say, get over it. There is no cosmic 2x4, pine, oak, treated lumber, galactic laser beam, or otherwise. This wooden phrase goes against the grain of the oldest and most revered truth principle, one that we affirm every single week. The truth triage about this one is there is only one presence and one power, God the what? God the good. And God the good does not punish us with 2x4s, wooden paddles, willow sticks, baseball bats, or any other wooden weapons. God, the good, lives in us as a love that has no end and a power that knows no bounds. And actually, the purely human, not cosmic, 2x4 is in our hands. It's our own error thinking, poor decisions, and errant actions, not God, that hurt us. And as long as we keep making bad decisions, guess what? We're going to get some bad results in our lives, right? 2x4 moments happen when we realize our own stale thought patterns and belief systems are not working. Only then can we turn within to connect with divine wisdom and guidance that always leads to our ever-unfolding good. So for each one of these, not only will there be a get over it, and a truth triage, but there also will be what they call a replacement phrase. So here is the replacement phrase for this one. I've created a 2x4 moment. Will you say that with me? I've created a 2x4 moment. Okay, so that's the pattern we're going to do today. So the second phrase is one that we've talked about before, actually. It's important because it is the foundation of Unity Principle number 3, that humans create their experience through the activity of their thinking. The saying is actually thoughts and feelings held in mind, produce after their own kind. Now, this is often interpreted to mean that every single thought that flies into our heads out pictures in the world. And you may have heard the story, I think I've actually told it before, about a minister who was preaching about the law of mind action. And he was up at the pulpit going, every single thing you thought you think becomes your reality. And he realized that there was a teenage boy in about the third row who was really squirming and acting a little nervous. And he thought, I wonder what's going on. So afterwards, he went to the young man and he said, is something the matter? And the young teenager said to the pastor, "Oh, pastor, I heard what you said, and all I can ever think about is girls, girls, girls. I do not want to turn into a girl." So, obviously, this whole thing is an oversimplification of a dynamic truth principle, and the authors say we simply have to get over it. Like many complex spiritual truths, it's just not quite that simple. Thank goodness, right? We cannot control every single thing that happens to us. We cannot control every single thing that happens around us. But remember, Eric Butterworth tells us we can always control what? What happens within us. That's right, our own consciousness, our own mind. The law of mind action works in our consciousness. Believing that we have total control over outer events makes us feel responsible and even guilty when the yuck shows up in our lives. I have a really good friend who's been in Unity for many, many years, who, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, shared with me the first thought that popped into her head was, "What was in my mind that caused this?" That's horrible. That's what we call metaphysical malpractice. That's simply not the way the truth works. In another of his books entitled Point of Power, Paul Hesselbeck writes, "I know that some of the thoughts that I do consistently hold, especially with strong feeling, do outpicture in the manifest realm, and I am grateful that others do not. If every thought I ever held with feeling actually manifested in the physical realm, this world would be a scary place. And I might add, there might be no spouses or partners left on this earth, right?" The truth triage is that thoughts we hold in mind tend to produce, after their own kind, almost 100% of the time in our minds, in our consciousness. Like everything in the universe, we are a field of energy. And when we hold joyful thoughts and feelings, we vibrate with joy. We build up a consciousness of joy, and we attract ourselves to joy into the world because that's our focus. Likewise, however, if we focus on fear, we're likely to see that fear grow and create a chain reaction. Then we find more and more things to be afraid about, and suddenly the world becomes a terrifying place. As we expand our awareness, hold the good in our minds, our experiences change, and often the outer circumstances shift. The authors say that in the outer realm, our thought power can manifest, this is a wide range, so get ready, any place from anywhere from 100% to not at all, to 0%. It depends on what we do with those thoughts and how we put them into action. So the replacement phrase for this one is, thoughts and feelings held in mind produce their own kind in my consciousness. Will you say that with me? Thoughts and feelings held in mind produce their own kind in my consciousness. Okay? So the next phrase is one that the authors say is one of the most misunderstood of all New Thought concepts. And I'm guessing, I'm not going to take a survey, but I'm guessing about 90% of us say this frequently, and it is what? Divine order. Divine order. Now, the reason this is on the just not so list is it is often used in the traditional sense that there's a God outside ordering everything that happens to us in our lives. The idea is that there's some preset order that governs all of our activities. Sounds a lot like predestination, doesn't it? And Bill and Paul say, get over it, because most people get divine order out of order. It's most commonly used as a statement of resignation rather than a statement of power that it's really intended to be. And here the authors quote Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore, who wrote, "We can never exercise dominion until we know who and what we are. Then we bring forth that knowledge into the external by exercising it in divine order." So the truth triage is something we talked about a couple weeks ago. It is that divine order is mind, idea, and expression, or mind, idea, and manifestation. In other words, divine order is the universal creative process. It's when we take a divine idea and we bring it into expression, we bring it into our lives. And because we can claim divine ideas every moment, divine idea is not, or divine order, I should say, is not an event, it's a process. It's a process that is always available to us. We can divinely order all of our experiences. In the face of illness, we can claim wholeness. In the face of lack, we can claim prosperity. In the place of discord, we can claim peace. It's up to us. We also can misorder our experiences. Anybody notice that? We can. It is. It's just up to us. So the replacement phrase is one I really like. It's, I'm divinely ordering. So I am opening myself up to these divine ideas, and I am co-creating it all with God. So could you say this with me, please? I'm divinely ordering. Okay, so the next phrase is one that I'm really glad to see on the list because I never believed it anyway. I remember exactly when I first heard this, when I first took the Quest class 20-something years ago, and I thought, that can't be right. I just have never believed it. And it's that life is a mirror. Now, that phrase usually means that whatever negative or trait or behavior we see in another person is actually something that we have in ourselves and that we exercise in ourselves. The authors tell us to get over it, saying, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most gullible of them all? This concept has become magnified into magical proportions. It is taken much too literally. Suppose, for example, we observe someone being dishonest. That doesn't necessarily mean that we have that tendency. Now, if we have a really strong emotional reaction to this person and we can't get over it and we can't forgive them, it may call for some self-examination to ask ourselves if somehow we do have a little bit of that characteristic. But the truth, I love this one, the truth is, life is not a mirror. Life is more like a mirage, an illusion that only appears real. And we have the power to transform world illusions into solid realities of truth. Instead of looking at negative traits in ourselves and others, we can look beyond others and ourselves to the Christ within. That new perspective helps us radiate peace and love and acceptance, and that makes all the difference. So the replacement phrase is, life is a mirage. Would you say that with me? Life is a mirage, meaning there's always a reality greater than what we can see with our human eyes. And the last phrase we're going to look at today is, he or she pushes my buttons. Now, one of my good friends, who's a former counselor, always says, of course your family pushes your buttons. Guess who installed them? Right? But this is a metaphor that we use that really rests on the belief that our emotional reactions are caused by somebody else. That family, friends, even virtual strangers can push buttons that are hotwired to our most vulnerable sore spots. However, Reverend Hesselbeck and Bill Holden say, get over it. No one pushes our buttons. We don't have invisible hot spots that others can push. This phrase is a classic example of what we call dwelling in victim consciousness. The real problem is that some of us build a condo and live there, right? Giving away our personal power. You hear people all the time say, oh, she made me so mad. Well, here's the thing. Nobody can make us mad without our consent. Okay? We might as well say somebody's pulling our strings, jerking us around, or pushing us like spineless mannequins. The truth triage, which I already had part of it up there, is we react emotionally to others. No one can make us angry or hurt without our consent. If buttons are pushed at all, we are the ones pushing our own. Now, of course, let's be real. We all have sore spots, sensitive areas, past hurts, and points of vulnerability based on our past experiences and beliefs. However, our reactions to others come from those beliefs and not from any outside stimuli or catalyst. Remember that pivotal soul, that soul that can always turn to the divine or turn to the outer world? We always have a choice. We can choose how to respond or react to another person's words or actions. We can always pause and ask ourselves, what am I telling myself about this event? Or if somebody gives us a horrible criticism, says something awful to us, we can look at them and say, well, that person's usually okay, but they're sure wrong about this. And we don't take it in, you know? If we take it in, then it's ours. So the authors say that this is really all about someone else's behavior being what we call information, and the outformation is up to us. When we really know that we are individualized expressions of God, we are the Christ, we are not nearly as affected by other people's opinions. The authors say it's all BS. You know what that stands for? Not what you think, okay? Don't say it out loud. We're being taped. Don't say it out loud. It's belief system. BS is your belief system. So the replacement phrase for this one is, I push my own buttons. Can we say that together? I push my own buttons. So these are only a few of the statements that Paul and Bill believe we should get over, because they're not the truth, or at least not the whole truth. And so, like, for example, where divine order is concerned, if you want to keep saying it, remember what it really means. And if you get a chance to share with somebody else what it really means, share it. Don't picture some, you know, puppeteer God pulling strings. So actually, I put my copies of these little books on the Jane's desk in the book room for anybody who'd like to look at them. And if you want to order either or both of them, there's a list there, and you can sign up, and we'll have them for you next week. At the end of the second book, the authors say, you might be asking yourself, why bother to get so picky about commonly used expressions? I bet some of you are thinking that today. What difference does it make? Well, their answer is that many of these phrases are the result of embedded theological beliefs and attitudes that we formed along the way. And using these just not true phrases reinforces those false beliefs and attitudes, not just in us, but in other people too. The authors say these phrases keep us glued to the old, like bubble gum on a shoe. Being stuck in religiosity seriously threatens our ability to expand our consciousness and become more spiritually aware. So we all know, or most of us know probably, that unity principle number 5 is we must live the truth we know through thoughts, words, and actions. Many people translate this into walk the talk. And here's the thing. If we're going to walk the talk, we have to make sure we're walking in the right direction. Our talk needs to align with principles of truth. Watching our theological language gives us the opportunity to claim something new and liberating, to grow into a greater awareness of our own innate divinity, and to master our human experience. And that's a good thing. And so it is. So now let's take a moment just to affirm that great spiritual truth that we affirm every single Sunday morning. This is in the bulletin for those of you who are here for the first time. And let's say it together. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.